October 19, 2012, Vrindavan, India, Nectar of Devotion, Chapter 7, Part 1.
So I thought the first half of this class will go over the positives, and the second half will go over the negatives. We'll have some time just for questions, but if there's, we can also be discussing the topics as we go through them. First, of course, is taking shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. Now, interestingly enough, Srila Prabhupada gives the qualification here for a bona fide spiritual master as: he must have realized the conclusions of the scriptures by deliberation and arguments and able to convince others. So that's the definition of what? Yes. But that's the definition of what? Yes, which uttama adhikari? Which, remember, there's three definitions of uttama adhikari. Which one? No. Oh, you're just guessing. Can't we just study this, folks? How long ago did we study this? Not just a few days. How are you going to remember this next year? Which uttama adhikari is this? Okay, but Srila Prabhupada is saying here, can you guys do the conversations at another time? That would be really sweet. We are on chapter 7.
I mean on this thing.
Oh, on that thing? It doesn't have page numbers. So you have to find it by... Yes, it's a compilation of files. So, it's on a page that says especially significant practices at the top and items 1 through 3, importance of the spiritual master at the bottom. Okay? The first page looks like this. And in Nectar of Devotion, page 59, it says, he must have realized the conclusions of the scriptures by deliberation and arguments and thus be able to convince others of these conclusions. What's that the description of? Which uttama adhikari? The NOD, same book. Yes. And what's interesting, let me just go through this. Tejasvini Radhika? You here? She here?
Yes.
Yes. But you were absent yesterday, right? Now, why is the use of this particular definition of uttama adhikari as the qualifications for a guru interesting? What's interesting about the fact that Srila Prabhupada is using this particular definition of uttama adhikari? Do you all remember what this definition of uttama adhikari is in relationship to? Yeah, faith and knowledge. But still, what was it in reference to? What was Eligibility for starting. Eligibility for starting. Just simply remarking on the fact that that's interesting. Okay, now also Srila Prabhupada says here, someone who's taking shelter of the Supreme Godhead, leaving aside all material considerations. One should not accept as a spiritual master someone who is a fool number one. Now that doesn't necessarily... We're not talking here about material IQ. You all know what IQ is? What score you get on an intelligence test? So we're not referring to that kind of thing. Who has no direction according to this, to the scriptural injunctions, whose character is... Okay, the scriptural injunctions. So in other words, the person has to be knowledgeable, has to be realized, and they should act according to the scriptures, whose character is doubtful. So they should have a high character, who does not follow the principles of devotional service. So they should be following the principles. Or who does not conquer the influence of the six sense gratifying agents, the tongue, the genitals, the belly, anger, the mind, and words. So Srila Prabhupada is very consistent at describing who is a bona fide guru. I believe most often what Prabhupada quotes is Strotriyam Brahmanistha, that one has heard from their own guru and one is fixed in the absolute truth. Okay, then one is accepting initiation and receiving instructions. Well, we should also mention it's also important here, the qualification of the disciple. What does Srila Prabhupada give as the qualification of the disciple?
Sincere.
Yes, but specifically. It's right at the beginning. Know for certain the material world is no happiness. A person who's seriously desirous of achieving real happiness. So in order to be a disciple, one has to be willing to go for spiritual rather than material happiness. If you want to have material happiness, then you have no business approaching a bona fide spiritual master. By the way, does material happiness mean just like a comfortable bed and nice food and nice clothes? And is that what we mean exactly by material happiness?
The motivation should be correct.
Yes, it's mostly a matter of consciousness. Because devotees do things that appear to be sense gratificatory. I remember when my mother first visited the temple, and she said, "You're always talking about the harm of sense gratification, but it seems to me that you people have a lot more sense gratification than anybody else." She said, "Your altar is beautiful. It's covered with fresh flowers. You're always playing beautiful music. You eat really nice food." You know, so on one level, we're not engaged in a process where we're sitting on a deerskin in the Himalayas and we're eating only roots. Has anyone here ever eaten? Sometimes we do that the last 5 days of Kartik. You eat just fruits and roots. Have any of you ever done that? Yeah. The last 5 days of Kartik, there's a vow that you can eat just fruits and roots. So who's ever done that? So it starts with, it's interesting because it starts with an ekadasi. So if you first do, you know, a full nirjala ekadasi, and usually after doing a nirjala ekadasi, you want to eat something. But then if all you're eating is fruits and roots, without salt.
That's a root, like a carrot.
Yeah, like a carrot, a potato. So it sounds very romantic, you know. Oh, fruits and roots like a forest sage. We'll be just like sages in the forest. But when you actually sit down for 5 days to unsalted roots and fruits, you know, it's difficult. So thank you, Srila Prabhupada, that that is not our process. I mean, if you want to do that, that's fine. But Prabhupada did not require that of us. Prabhupada didn't even require we do Nirjala Ekadasi. Again, that's the traditional Vaishnava practice, but Prabhupada did not require that of us. So Prabhupada gave us nice clothes to wear. You know, like in the Bhagavatam, Sukadeva Goswami says, why get clothes? Just find some old clothes lying on the street and wear those. Could you imagine if we actually did that? You know, don't have a pillow, just lie on your arm. Don't have bedding, just lie on the ground. So of course you can do that. Nobody will stop you. Of course Jagannanda Pandi tried to stop Chaitanya Mahaprabhu from living like that. But we are having so many. I mean, we have flowers. Beautiful flowers. Right? Like in Ranastami, the whole temple was decorated in flowers. It was like a flower palace. So we were also enjoying. So by sense gratification, we don't just mean that. But we mean a mood of, I am the center, I am God, everything is here for my enjoyment. That's material happiness. Material happiness is not just having money. Srila Prabhupada was managing so much money in the Hare Krishna movement. Material happiness means the concept that I am the enjoyer and I am the controller. So why don't you become disgusted with this? Of course, generally when we're disgusted with this, we're also not particularly interested in nice food and nice clothes and nice money and that kind of thing, except as used for service. But people make the mistake of thinking material desires just means I want a car, instead of material desires means I want to be the enjoyer. So why don't you become disgusted with it in order to actually be a disciple? Mm. Yes?
Mental speculation and all this?
Mental speculation, I really do not see very many devotees engage in mental speculation. Mental speculation means, you know, wildly guessing about the truth of existence. It's very unusual.
I have a question.
Yes. Well, the concept is still there, but there should be some disgust with that concept, even in the beginning. I mean, I can just use myself as a very simple example. I still want to be God. I'm sorry that I have to admit before all of you, I still want to be the controller and the enjoyer. That I am not free of ahankara. But when I first joined the Hare Krishna movement, actually, when I decided I was going to join, part of what made me decide, I was working in a museum. It was part of my college education. We had to get a job for 2 months. So I was working in a museum and I was a tour guide in this museum, and it was a museum of science where you push a button and things happen. It wasn't like just looking at paintings kind of museum. So when I was in this museum, I had gotten the Radha Krishna Temple album that George Harrison produced, the one that has Govinda that we play every morning, Rama Samhita, that Jamuna is singing. And it also had the Hare Krishna mantra, it had a number of things, but among them it had Ishopanishad. And for some reason I was particularly attracted to chanting the Ishopanishad. It doesn't have a whole Ishopanishad, just some of the mantras. So I was sitting in this museum. I had visited a temple twice previous to that when I was 14. So I was sitting in the museum and I'd be chanting the Ishopanishad. You know, if I was waiting for a group to come. I'd just be there, Om Purnam Madha Purnam Idam Purnam, like that. And from this chanting, I could understand that the people in the museum were all in illusion and darkness and frustration. And I remember seeing, so I was 17 at the time, so I remember seeing other people my own age who were going through this museum trying to act really cool and grown up and sophisticated. And I saw they were all acting like fools. And I realized, I'm not any better. I'm just as much of a fool as all these other people. And I remember during that time also going with a friend to a restaurant, and there were some people next to us talking, and I said, everything they're talking about is just foolish and nonsense. And then I realized, again, because I was chanting every day, and I realized everything I'm talking about is also foolish and nonsense. So that, at least that much detachment, you know, where I was riding on the train every morning to go to work. And, you know, you're 17, you're thinking, what am I going to do with my life? And I'm looking at all these people, and none of them look happy to go to work. They all look like this. And I thought, so, you know, I'll find something in life that I like, and after 10, 15 years, I'll look like these people. I said, I want something where I can be, you know, where I can want to get out of bed, where I can feel happy in the morning. And then I ended up running into one devotee, Aryasamani Nandanan Prabhu, on the train. And he told me where the temple was. Actually, the temple was 2 blocks from where I was living. So I went and I stayed for 2 weeks. And as soon as I went to one Mangal Arti, I said, yes, this is what I want. I want to get up and dance in the morning instead of getting up like this. But my point is I had some detachment. It wasn't that I gave up my ahankara. I still, unfortunately, have not given up all my ahankara. And I'm sure you notice it from time to time in my teaching. But at least I had, or maybe you notice it all the time in my teaching, I don't know, for which I profusely apologize. But at least at that time I had some concept that I was disgusted with this concept of material enjoyment. I didn't really understand what material enjoyment was. No, but I just had, it was disgusting. This idea that I'm the center and I'm important and I'm wonderful and the whole world revolves around me and I'm going to be happy in this world. So that it was a very immature detachment. It wasn't very deep. It wasn't very knowledgeable. It wasn't very developed, but it was there. And so that has to be there.
This is given in Srimad Bhagavatam 11th canto. Dukhate sukhaye tatpasyat paripariyasu. If one person is realizing the result is going opposite, then tasmat guru prapadyate jigyasu
sthayam uttama.
After that, the next stage comes when in this mood, a person should go to the spiritual master.
Thank you. Yes. That is the proper mood. So then accepting, initiate. Oh, why is this first? Because all the other items come from this. If you don't have the shelter of a guru, you can't do anything else. Nothing else is possible. How will you know what to do? Now, of course, taking the shelter of a guru may be as simple as getting the nectar devotion in the mail or from a devotee on the street, and you can start to read it and know what to do. That is also shelter of a guru. But without the shelter of a guru in some way, you can't. I mean, before I had contact with Srila Prabhupada, I was trying to meditate and I was trying to achieve some sort of perfection, but I didn't know what I was doing. And I know many devotees who did things like that. You know, I would sit and try to meditate, but what was I doing? What was I trying to achieve? I really didn't know. I didn't have a system. And I was looking. I want a system. I want some way where I can be spiritual 24 hours a day. But I had no idea how to do that. So unless you have some guide, how are you going to know? You know, without a guru, Prabhupada says this, one can understand there's a God, one can even understand I'm not this body. One can understand that material enjoyment is only miserable. You know, one can understand these things. But to know exactly what to do, one needs to have a teacher. Then accepting initiation. So we talked about this previously, about the specific value of taking initiation, that it's a commitment. And Prabhupada said, right, the connection is never actually made until one gets initiated. So I know now in our Hare Krishna movement, people often wait a long, long, long time to get initiated. And I have my own feelings about that. You know, we have people 10, 15 years in the movement and they're not initiated. So initiate means to begin. So to begin the process, and I'd like to see facility where it wasn't such a long involved. First you have to do this, and then 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 you have to do that, and then you have to do the other thing, and then maybe we'll consider you for initiation. Yes.
Did Prabhupada recommend any time period for waiting for initiation?
6 months. Because Hari Bhakti Vilas is 1 year. So Prabhupada's, because Srila Prabhupada took the standard diksha and broke it in half. So Prabhupada gave 3 parts at first initiation and 2 parts at second. And because Hari Bhakti Vilas says 1 year, what Prabhupada would do is he would give first initiation after 6 months and second initiation 6 months after that. So altogether a year. Yes?
It's not me, but someone I used to be born in Bay, they just think that, oh, you can just get initiated in your heart, you don't actually probably accept Prabhupada, or they don't want to actually take that formal initiation. So
therefore, one needs to have a shelter of guru and hear and not just make up things in your own brain.
Yeah, so
that means they haven't done step one. Step two is initiation. Step one is take shelter of a guru.
You just get a nectar devotion in the mail. So
well, that's how you start, but then when you get the nectar devotion in the mail, what are you going to read? Take initiation. That's your answer
it's
for them.
I
wasn't accusing you, but that's your answer for such people, that if you've really taken shelter of a guru in your heart, then the guru says, take initiation.
The person has to be alive, basically.
Well, initiation is a two-way street. I accept you and you accept me.
I was confirming about
No, well, just like you can't marry dead people.
I know, that's what I'm saying. You're going to ask them how they're going to reply. Can you initiate me and wait for the reply?
You know, if you have to marry somebody who also agrees. At least in the Western marriage ceremonies, both sides have to say, I do. Both have to say, I do. Our Prabhupada compares initiation to getting enrollment in a university. So the university also has to agree. You can't just say, well, I really like Oxford, so I'm just going to go around telling everybody I'm a student at Oxford. Oxford has to agree. It's a two-way situation. So we'll come to the others in a moment. But yes?
Why
nowadays
sometimes
it takes so long time to get initiation?
Sometimes you see some devotee, they are very really, very serious on the devotional service, but sometimes you heard that some devotee for 10 years.
Yeah, I know, it's not a good situation.
No. But it's not like it's not the decision or agreement with RGBC, it's just some individual reason.
Is age also the criteria for the duration of time?
Age?
Somebody who is settled in Grasta, he can be initiated. He's stable. Who's stable in Grasta?
Prabhupada said minimum age for initiation would be like 12 years old. So I'm not sure what you're asking. You're just asking, can Grahastas get initiated?
No, I was asking somebody.
Yes.
He has lesser chances of he's more stable. Somebody who has entered into ashram, he stayed with you.
That's an individual, at the individual discretion of a guru. So a guru can look at a particular individual and say, you're not ready for initiation yet. And whatever this particular circumstances might be. Because not only is the disciple supposed to test the guru is supposed to test the disciple. That's why I say it's a two-way. The guru has to test the disciple. Now, I mean, you can ask someone to test your guru for you, and you can ask someone to test your disciple for you, but it's the responsibility of a disciple to test the guru, and it's the responsibility of a guru to test the disciple. It's not that there's some other system. So if someone says, I want to be a disciple, and the guru is examining them, and the guru sees this person has some sort of situation, either they're not ready for initiation, or I don't personally want to initiate this person, then they may say, you know, I'm sorry, I'm not the right person to give you shelter. You need to go someplace else. Like when Drupada wanted to do the yajna to get a child who would kill Dronacharya, and he went to one Brahmin, and the Brahmin said, I'm the wrong person. You have to talk to my brother. So first of all, the guru might say, you know, you may be ready for initiation, but I'm not the right person to initiate you. You need to go to somebody else. Or the guru may say, I'm sorry, you're not ready. So the guru has that discretion. Yes.
How does someone
as the
guru for you?
That if the guru wants to do it that way, if you want to talk about according to Shastra, just like Srila Prabhupada, you know, asked temple presidents to recommend. Of course, Prabhupada wasn't dependent on that. Srila Prabhupada could initiate people without temple presidents' recommendation.
This is how somebody else tests you. If I understood your answer, how somebody else tests the disciple instead of the guru.
It shouldn't be like that, generally.
But how is the other way around?
The guru tests the disciple.
Because you mentioned, that they're both. The guru tests the disciple.
And the disciple tests the guru.
So how the disciple tests the guru is for somebody else? You mentioned that.
Well, that's what we're doing now.
Yeah.
That's now our standard established policy.
I don't understand.
You don't? Then just leave it.
What's the policy?
Just, if you don't understand it, just leave it. I'm not going to explain it. Just to say that according to Shastra, according to Srila Prabhupada, according to the Acharyas, according to Shastra, the disciple has to test the guru, and the guru has to test the disciple. It's not anybody else's business. Now, a disciple can say, I want someone else to test the guru for me because the guru lives on the other side of the planet and I'm going to ask someone else to test them for me and I'm going to rely on their discretion. And the guru can say, just like Srila Prabhupada did in many cases, I want someone else to test this disciple for me. That they can make that choice on an individual basis. But it remains the duty of a disciple to find out a guru. I will say, I know this is being recorded, but I will say that you will not find anything anywhere from Srila Prabhupada, from the Acharyas, or in the Shastras, that one of the qualifications of a spiritual master is that they receive the votes of a committee. You do not find that anywhere. Srila Prabhupada never says, find a spiritual master who's fixed in the scriptures, controlled their senses, and has received the votes of a committee. Or who is on an official list. That is not anywhere. So I will have the courage to say that. Yes?
It's like in Scott, whoever the guru is selected to give the initiation, it's like what means it if you say it has to be tested from the disciple?
It's like, very difficult at the present time to follow these instructions. I really don't want to say too much more. I have some courage, I don't have absolute courage. Let's put it this way. I'm a member of the Shastric Advisory Council to the GBC. We were asked to research this very question. We wrote a paper on this question. Our paper was ignored, although it's on the GBC website. So I would very much like an ISKCON if we would return to Sadhu Shastra Guru on this point of finding a spiritual master. I think that would be, that would solve probably about 70 or 80% of the problems in our Hare Krishna.
Now, this testing is on what background?
Like. Testing is on this platform. The qualification of a spiritual master is you must have realized the conclusions of the scriptures by deliberation arguments and thus be able to convince others of those conclusions. Such great personalities who have taken shelter of the Supreme Godhead, leaving aside all material considerations, are to be understood as bona fide spiritual masters. The purport is that one should not accept as a spiritual master someone who is fool number one, who has no direction according to the scriptural injunctions, whose character is doubtful, who does not follow the principles of devotional service, or who has not conquered the influence of the sixth sense gratifying agents.
But even initially we discussed, like, pure devotee is one whose motivation is, maybe, like, similarly, like, if we say, they may not be completely up to the, but. The question is like, even if they are towards the right path, maybe similarly the definition of a pure devotee has been discussed, like...
That's true.
May act as a leader?
I would say also that although here Srila Prabhupada is talking about an ideal situation where you find such a guru and take initiation from that guru, one may also take initiation from one guru and have someone else as Shiksha Guru. So we do have that, and we have that with, say, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who had much more connection with his Shiksha Guru than with his Diksha Guru.
Who is his Shiksha Guru?
Who is his Shiksha Guru?
Jagannath
Das Babaji. And his Diksha Guru was Bipin Bihari. We do not list in our books, we don't list our Diksha Parampara. You're all aware of that? That what we list in our books is a Shiksha Parampara, and some of those people are also connected by Diksha, but most of them are not. Our Diksha Parampara would look radically different. In fact, our Diksha Parampara would have a whole lot of women in it. Just by the way.
Looking for a spiritual master, obviously the disciple, the Buddha disciple, isn't like, you don't really know for sure, you know what I mean? Like, appearances,
therefore, Hari Bhakti Vilas says, you must live with the guru for 1 year. Now, that doesn't mean you have to live in the same room. The idea is you live preferably in the same village. The traditional Diksha Guru, especially, was a householder. The Prabhupada says in Chaitanya Charitamrita that generally only the householders would give diksha, but that the Vaishnava sannyasis are also allowed to give diksha, because one of the aspects of diksha is deity worship, and traditionally the sannyasis didn't engage in deity worship, although Vaishnava sannyasis engage in deity worship. So generally the Diksha Guru is a householder, and you're in the village, and you live in the village for a year, and you observe for a year. And you actually observe directly. You don't have someone else observe for you. You don't base your decision on the votes of a committee who don't know the person either, etc. And you observe yourself.
So I can see sometimes, like, the authority or whoever is recommending or whatever, they're sometimes more lenient than maybe the spiritual master might be, or more harsher or something, so it doesn't always fit.
Anyway, well, let's just talk about Shastra.
I just want to know, because this is confusing, it's like,
well, yes, it's very confusing. It's very confusing. Although it's actually quite simple. So we've made it quite confusing. But it's actually quite simple. So you should have first-hand observation of somebody for a year. Now, you can hide who you are for a day or a week or a month, but it's pretty hard to hide who you are for a year. If you live closely with somebody for a year, you'll see who they are. You know, a week, a day, a month, somebody just comes in and, you know, they have some charisma and they can speak nicely and they're impressive and 10,000 other people are following them. You know, Prabhupada says that's blind following, which is condemned. Oh, so many people are following him, that must be the right thing to do. You know, must be the right person to follow. So many people are following so many people. So, of course, Srila Prabhupada's here talking mostly about so many just bogus gurus, not only in India, but in every religion of the world. There's so many, you know, Christian ministers who'll say, send me $5 and I'll send you a piece of cloth that you put under your pillow and it will give you money. You know, really. It goes on, you know, this is not just an Indian problem or a Hindu problem. It's a general problem that somebody gets up and says, I'm a religious leader, I'm a spiritual leader, and they're a fool number one who can't control their senses and don't have any good qualities. You know, this happens. And sometimes many, many people get fooled. There was a famous Christian leader a few decades ago, you know, where he and his wife were, they were collecting millions and millions and millions of dollars, and they had millions and millions of followers, and it ended up that they were very corrupt. They were stealing the money, especially the man. They were stealing the money, and they were doing all sorts of sinful activities. So, it's certainly possible to be fooled. Therefore, one should live for 1 year. Okay. And Prabhupada's talking about accepting the spiritual master as good as God. Satchavari Twainasamastra Shastra. That doesn't mean that the guru is God. It doesn't mean the guru is omniscient and omnipotent and, you know, having Rasa Leela dances. That's not what it means. But just like if you're driving on the highway and a police officer stops you, so you respect the police officer as good as the whole government. Even though the police officer is just another person like you, still, because they're representing the government, you give that police officer all the respect that you give to the government. So in the same way, one doesn't treat the spiritual master as an ordinary person, although they're also a jiva. Actually, really nice letter. Srila Prabhupada said, spiritual master is not a particular man. Spiritual master is a truth. So therefore, we say guru is one. Okay, and then one should serve the spiritual master, not being envious and actually rendering some service. So this is the beginning of the whole thing. Without a guide, one cannot get anywhere. All right, but that's not enough, because number four is one should follow the saintly persons. Now, it's interesting here that Srila Prabhupada, in writing about following the saintly persons, talks about Shastra, and one should follow the Shastra, and Rupa Goswami gives the example of Buddha, who's an incarnation, but who didn't follow the Shastra. Therefore, we do not accept that following Buddha is following saintly persons. So there has to be all three, sadhu, Shastra, and guru. So the guru must be someone who knows the Shastra. The guru has to be someone who's following the Shastra. The guru has to be somebody who's teaching the Shastra. The guru has to be someone who themselves is following the saintly persons. They all have to go together. So if a guru is teaching something that's not in the Shastra, or teaching something that's not done by the saintly persons, that's not a guru. Even if such a person is an incarnation, we don't accept them as guru. So we don't accept Buddha as guru. He had a mission to do, but as far as achieving uttam bhakti, we want to have somebody who's following the conclusions of the Shastra. All right, now asking questions. So therefore, in this class, I ask everyone to ask questions. So sometimes people think, well, we shouldn't ask questions. That shows we have doubts. Well, of course we have some doubts. Unless you're in prema bhakti, you're going to have some doubts. Must be. And if you are in Prema Bhakti, you like to ask questions just because you want to hear more about Krishna. So either way, if you are not yet experiencing Prema, then you want to surface your doubts. And if you are experiencing Prema, you want to simply swim in the ocean of hearing more about Krishna. And our shastras are all questions and answers. What's the Bhagavad Gita? Questions and answers. What's the Bhagavatam? Questions and answers. Not Chaitanya Charitamrita, but Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. It's all questions and answers. And like in the end of, 2.2 in Bhagavatam, Sajiva Goswami says, that's actually the end of the Bhagavatam, where Maharaj Parikit says, now I've answered, where Sukadeva Goswami says to Maharaj Parikit, now I've answered all your questions. So the Bhagavatam would end there, except that Maharaj Parikit asks more questions. Machchitam Magata Parnam Boryantas Prasra. So this discussion of questions and answers is very enlivening. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sat for 7 days without asking any questions, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was not happy. Similarly, as a teacher, I'm never happy if the audience is just like this. You just feel like, why am I teaching? So there was one place where I was preaching, and especially the Sunday feast crowd there, I don't know why, but somehow the Sunday feast crowd, they were all like walls, everybody.
What?
They were like a wall. Everybody there was like a wall. I tried a few times to have some interaction, and it never worked. They never responded. They were all just like this. Every Sunday. I don't know what it was.
Maybe they just didn't understand you.
It was an English-speaking country. So I don't think that was the problem. Something about the culture. Something in that temple on the Sunday feast crowd. So I never liked to give the Sunday feast lectures there. I did a few times, but I never enjoyed it. Because they were all just like... And you never knew. Did they hear anything you said? Did they like it? Did they not like it? Did they understand it? You know. So inquiring. That's number 5. Rupa, this. Okay, remember everybody, these are the most important 10, right? So asking questions. That's number 5 in the list of most important 10. Being prepared to give up everything material for Krishna's satisfaction. So again, that does not just mean giving up your car. Although giving up your car may be nice also, but that's not just what it means. It means not only gross, but subtle. And this doesn't necessarily mean that you're living like that man down by the Wholesome grocery who lives on the street with only a blanket. You've all seen him? He's been there for like 12, 13 years. So this item here, number 6, does not mean we all have to live like that. You know?
Well, we notice that guy.
I cannot help but notice that guy, because I last 2 times I was here in Vrindavan, I stayed at the Food for Life ashram, so not noticing that guy was not an option. So he's a very interesting, he doesn't move from a little area like a cow that's tied up to a stick, you know. He has just, of course he did move at one point because they did some construction and he was forced to move from his original place, but he's been there like 12, 13 years. And he just stays in one area. He has actually nothing. People give him blankets, but he has no clothes at all. And even in the rainy season and the hot season, he's just on the street and people bring him some food, and I don't know if he's a great sadhu or what he is. No. I have no idea.
Did you say self-fruit?
Huh?
Self-fruit?
No. I said the people give him food. No, he does. He just stays on the street. He doesn't do particularly anything. So it's not. We're not saying that. You know, we're not saying tomorrow, okay, class is canceled and we're all just going to go live on the street without anything. But we should be prepared. This is item number 6. Be prepared that anything Krishna asks us to give up, we should be willing to give up. sometimes that means giving up, you know, shoes and cars and clothes and chocolate cake or something like that. But often it means giving up pride, arrogance, anger, lust, some bad habit, being critical of others. Yes?
How do you understand that Krishna wants to give up his things?
Oh, what a wonderful question. How can we understand what Krishna wants us to give up? Well, first of all, you have the Shastra that tell you what to give up. Shastras, Vatra Vegam, Manasakara Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Rudra Pasta Vegam, Kamakrod, Lobh. So you know from the Shastra what we're required to give up. Then how will you know? Mostly through very attentive chanting and hearing. What will happen if you have, and attentive service in general, if you're doing deity service, attentiveness. If you're attentive to taking prasadam, it's also service. If you're attentive to worshipping the deity, if you're attentive to studying the nectar devotion, if you're attentive to hearing, if you're attentive to your chanting, if you're attentive, that means that you'll be in touch with Krishna. And what does he say? Tesham satatayuktanam bhajatam prithipurvakam dadami buddhiyogam tam yena maham upayati te tesham evanukam partam aham agyanajam tamah nasayam yatmavavosto gyanadipena bashvatam. So if we're attentive, and then it will be revealed. I've seen it can be revealed in many ways. Krishna's infinitely clever and he has infinite number of ways of revealing. He may reveal it in the heart. There may be a little voice in your heart that says, it's time to let go of this. It may be something you read in a purport. You'll be reading a purport, and one of the sentences all of a sudden gets in a size 50 font and jumps out of the page and starts dancing across the room and says, read me. Have you all had this experience? That you read something you read in Prabhupada's books, and one sentence comes out and kind of punches you right in the forehead. And you say, whoa. So sometimes Krishna tells you like that. Sometimes your guru will tell you, hey, you, do this. Sometimes it's just some person. Prabhupada was selling back to Godheads, and just some person said, why don't you write books instead of magazine? People throw magazines away and they keep books. Or when Prabhupada was in the hospital after a stroke in America, and the doctor comes in and said, this old man's praying too much, he needs to get exercise. And the devotees were very angry. Oh, he's offended. Prabhupada said, no, he's speaking the truth. And after that, Prabhupada went on a morning walk every day. It can be some person. Krishna is very clever. So there was a time that I was following a particular vow, and I really liked this vow. I mean, it was a vow I was so happy to follow. I loved it. I'm not going to tell you. And I felt very, very close to Krishna. And it was one of the sweetest things I was doing. And every day it was a sweet, sweet thing. But it was the kind of vow that you shouldn't really tell anybody else that you're doing. And I told a couple people. And I did it all together for 3 years. And then I told another couple people. And altogether I probably told about 6 or 7 people. And at one point I realized I was becoming proud. Oh, I do this. Right. So actually, I was here in Vrindavan, and I was talking to a friend here, and she said, Urmila, you should not be doing this Ratta here in Vrindavan. It's not appropriate. And I just got offended. I thought, what do you know? I've been doing this for years, and I love it. And I thought, I'm not going to listen to her. I'm just going to do whatever I want to do. And a couple hours later, another good friend of mine who gives me very good advice called me up and started yelling at me and saying, "Urmila, are you still following that vow?" I said, "Yeah." "Stop it immediately." "Okay." So there may be many ways. I haven't gone back to it, although maybe sometime I will, but if I do, I'm sure not going to tell anybody about it. So there may be many ways. You know, I mean, I just had an experience a few days ago where it was 2 years ago. I was asked to do some service by one very senior devotee who has given me good guidance. And I started it. I started planning it, and I started researching it, and I started preparing. And then I stopped. I said, "This is too hard. I can't do this. I'm not qualified to do this. I don't know how to do this. It's too big. It's too difficult. I'll never be successful anyway. And I'm not advanced enough. I'm not materially qualified enough. Forget it." So I just put it aside. And then like 3 days ago, again, a different very senior devotee, who I also take advice from, called me up and said, "Urmila, why are you doing this? You should be doing this." Okay. Then the person called me back an hour later, "And you should be doing it like this and like this and like this." And I said, that's what I was told to do 2 years ago. I said, "You're telling me exactly what I was told to do 2 years ago. Well, why haven't you done it?" I said, "Because I'm not qualified." And the person said, "Well, just let Krishna do it. What do you think you're going to do it for?" "But I need this. Just do it. And this is what you should call it. This is just telling me all the details." And I went, "Oh, okay." So sometimes it's like that. You know, sometimes if you don't listen, then somebody comes, Krishna arranges for someone to come and yell at you. Does everyone have these experiences?
Yes.
Krishna tells you in different ways?
Yes.
Sometimes it's a little whisper in the heart. "It's time for you to do this." And if you don't listen, it gets a little louder. "Hey, it's time for you to do this." You read it in a purport, you go, And if you still don't do it, then someone says it in a class. And then you're like, you know, and you go home and cry for a few hours. And then if you still don't do it, then, you know, somebody comes up to you and actually speaks directly to you. "You need to do this." If you still don't do it, then maybe 10 people come and tell you. And if you still don't do it, maybe Krishna shakes your life around a little bit. Takes some things away, gives you some other things, put you here, put you there. Turn something upside down. Has somebody say, "Oh, we don't want you doing this service anymore, get out of here." "What am I supposed to do now?" "Oh yeah, I'm supposed to do that thing I was told to do for the last 5 years." So, in different ways, if you really want to know what is the next thing to do, ask. Inquiring. So that was number 5. So ask. And then prepare to take the answer. That's number 6. So ask. Who's the first person you can ask? Krishna! Try your heart. He's right there. Don't need a phone. Don't need an email address. Don't need to schedule an appointment. You will get instant responses if you obey. Do you want to get fast responses?
Yes.
Then reciprocate. Just like I'm sure you've all had this. People come to you and ask you things, and then they don't listen to you. This happens to all of you? Yes. Are you going to keep giving advice to someone who never listens to you? No. So I've had some people in my life, "Oh, Urmila, please tell me what to do. Please give me an instruction." I say, "Okay, I humbly suggest you do this. Oh, I can't do that. Okay. Maybe you can do this. No, I can't do that either. Okay. Maybe you can do this. No, I can't do that either. And then they come to me a week later with the same problem. Please tell me what to do. After a while, you stop telling them, right? So Krishna's not more foolish than we are. If I'm intelligent enough to give advice only to people who actually want my advice, so Krishna's going to be more of a fool than me? So if you say to Krishna, what do I need to do next? He will tell you. Now, if you've had a habit for the last 5 or 10 or 20 or 50 years of not listening to him, then he may not tell you right away. But he will tell you. Then you have to listen. You have to be prepared. Exactly. Inquire and then be prepared. What is the answer? It may mean giving up something that you're afraid to give up. Yes?
What if it happens, for example, in such a situation that you get like two seemingly different answers? So, for example, you get like inspiration from Krishna in a certain way, but then, for example, the guru would say something.
Oh, this even happened to Arjuna with Asvatthama. So it's not only our problem. Right? Arjuna brings back Asvatthama and Krishna says, kill him. And Bhima says, kill him. And Draupadi says, you know, and she wanted him killed in the beginning, but when she actually saw him, she didn't want to kill him because she said, his mother already lost her husband. This is her only child. I've now lost all of my children. I don't want her to cry like me. And Yudhisthira saying, you know, he's a son of our teacher. Our teacher's already dead. How can we kill him? And Krishna said to Arjuna, you're going to have to figure out how to do both. Mother Yasoda has this problem when she's giving Krishna her own breast milk and the milk boils over. And she doesn't know what to do. Because her own bodily milk and the milk on the stove, they're both for Krishna. Which does she take care of? This also happened when the messenger from the kings came to Krishna and said, all these kings are imprisoned by Jarasandhar. Please release them. And Krishna says, yes. And then Narada Muni comes and says, Maharaj Yudhisthira wants you to come to the Rajasuya festival. So Krishna turns to Uddhava and says, what to do? And Uddhava says, well, if you go to the Rajasuya festival, that will have to involve killing Jarasandhar. But of course, those kings had to wait for at least a year. My guess is about 18 months. Before Krishna actually released them. So this is not an unusual situation to be in. All right, a break until 3:40.